Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Harlan Coben, who has recently written Promise Me, published by Dutton. And first of all, Harlan, thanks so much for taking time out of what I know is a busy schedule to appear on the show today.
Great to be here, Casey.
Harlan, if we go back to the Myron Bolitar series, the last time that we met up with Myron Bolitar was Darkest Fear in 2000. And in the acknowledgments of Promise Me, you say you get asked two questions, one, how tall you are, and number two, when Myron Bolitar is going to come back. And we'll just tell everybody you're 6'4". But Myron Bolitar reappearing in Promise Me, outside of the demand, what else was the genesis of bringing Myron back at this point in time?
Well, I always start with an idea. I don't really start with a character. And for the last 6 years, that idea has not worked for Myron. In this case, something kind of happened in my real life. I overheard some teenagers talking about drinking and driving and partying and all of that, and I pulled them aside and I said, promise me, title of the book, promise me you won't do that. If you're ever in a bind, if you ever need help, if you're out drinking, here's my phone numbers. I don't care if it's 3 in the morning. I don't care where you are. I won't tell your parents. I won't ask any questions. I'll just pick you up, but promise me you won't drink and drive. And Myron has two young ladies make that promise to him at the beginning of the book. 3 weeks later, one of them calls him. He picks her up. He drops her off at what he thinks is a friend's house, and the night swallows her whole. Next morning, she's gone. No one knows where she is. But what I realized was that this is the perfect idea for Myron Bolitar. You know, I asked myself, who can possibly answer this? Who could possibly answer this call? And it was Myron.
Mm-hmm. And that is a parent's worst nightmare. And I have a 21-year-old stepdaughter, and I remember having that conversation with her when she was 14 years old, telling her, no matter what happens, no matter what kind of a spot you get yourself into, you can call us night or day. We won't ask any questions. And that is something that if you say it, you have to follow through on it. Myron has the integrity, and the readers know that he will follow through on his promise, as difficult as it may be to follow through on.
Right. Well, it's a good deed that sort of goes punished for him. But that's sort of what a lot of the books are. They're what-ifs. I like to take things that will happen in everyday circumstances, everyday situations, and sort of ask what if, rather than, I don't write books about serial killers. I don't write books about political conspiracies reaching the White House. I prefer that quieter, placid pool.
Harlan, when I reread Darkest Fear, which was published in 2000, there was a paragraph that jumped out at me that I'd like to mention to you, because to me, part of the maturation of Myron Bolitar is what happens in a post-9/11 world. And in 2000, Myron says he debated purchasing a $5,500 life-size statue of a Star Wars Star Trooper that had been reduced to a mere $3,499. Talk about redefining nouveau riche. Here's a little tip for you. If you've purchased a Sharper Image life-size Star Wars Star Trooper, take out your Platinumist charge card, hand it to the nearest cashier, and buy a life. And that was the world in 2000. And post-9/11, it's a different world we live in, but I thought that paragraph almost encapsulated where we were as a society in the year 2000.
Yeah, I think you probably have a point there. I mean, a lot of my writing has changed in subtle ways. Until now, I haven't mentioned 9/11 at all in books. No Second Chance, there's one paragraph where Mark Seidman, the lead character, is driving on the New Jersey Turnpike, and he looks to his right, as I often do, and remembers where those towers were. And as time has gone on, he's kind of forgetting where they are, and that really makes him angry. But outside of that, I haven't written directly about 9/11, but it shades everything you do. It's the same thing as if you were writing a book in 1974, and you don't necessarily mention the Vietnam War, but it's there in every page.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first time in Promise Me that I kind of took 9/11 head on in some way, not very much of a way, but I wanted to wait until I could do it with a light touch. I live in a suburb outside of New York City. My town was hit very, very hard by 9/11. We lost a lot of people here. I don't think more than a day or two passes that I don't see somebody who's lost a father or a spouse, so it's a little more raw here.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I think that promised me, one of the things that I enjoyed the most was that and I think the readers of Myron Bolitar enjoy, is that there's a political correctness which he ignores. There's, I know there are, I would imagine you have a very strong population of women readers who enjoy the way you write about the relationship from the point of view of a male without stepping on the toes of women who are much stronger than men are to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I do. I mean, Tell No One, for example, which is my big breakout book, was really a love story. I mean, it was a thriller also, but it was really a love story. And a lot of the books are. And in Promise Me, I think this is one of my favorite relationships that Myron is dating now, a 9/11 widow. And trying to deal with that and have a light touch, make it both heartbreaking and funny at the same time, was a heck of a challenge. But I'm really happy with how it all turned out.
Yeah, I am too, and I don't think it's any surprise that the book is doing as well as it is, because in a way, kind of, Nelson DeMille kind of does the same thing with John Corey. He takes the risk of being maybe offending some people, but does it realizing that readers are intelligent enough to realize that this is fiction and this is a character's point of view and its creativity. And so many times people get so concerned about what they're going to say that they censor themselves, and you can always tell it in a writing.
I mean, I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah. One of the things in Promise Me and in all of your books, Harlan, that I really enjoy are the references that you make to the societal references you make. And on page 131 of Promise Me, you talk a little bit about editors. And there's a reference in there that when I read it, I laughed out loud because I destroyed a couple million brain cells listening to Blue Oyster Cult and Buck Dharma. And when you ran Buck Dharma by the editor, who was the lead guitar player for Blue Oyster Cult, I mean, do they sometimes say to you, Harlan, nobody's going to know who Buck Dharma is?
No, they let me have my way on that kind of thing. Sure, I was a Blue Oyster Cult fan when I was in high school also. I went to a couple of their concerts, and a lot of those are winks and nods. Nils Lofgren is also listed there, who is the E Street Band guitarist with Bruce Springsteen and a close friend of mine. But that's part of the fun of writing it. Yeah, I love when people recognize something like that. And if you don't recognize it, you'll just go right over it. So
exactly.
It's fine.
There's a Steely Dan reference in in an earlier book. And those, to me, are timeless. So, I mean, you know, for those of us that like to listen to music and listen and read novels, I love it whenever an author does that and becomes a little obscure, which is fun, because like you say, if I don't know who it is, I just keep going. It doesn't.
Yeah, there you go. Steely Dan, and everything comes back around. Steely Dan and Blue Oyster Cult are both still playing.
I know. God bless them.
Yeah.
It's the let's put some money away for retirement tour.
That's it.
One of the things that you do and Promise Me is one of the characters, Eric.
Eric Wu.
Yes, he says that.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking the wrong book. Eric Beale. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's all right. He's telling Myron about some relationship problems that he has, and he says that it's not about sex, it's about passion. And a lot of men don't write like that. And as you age and mature as a human being and as a parent and that kind of thing, do you see Myron Bolitar growing up alongside with you, or is he kind of your alter ego who you just have fun with and get to say some things that are just fun to get off your chest?
Well, I don't really think about them either way. I mean, really what I'm trying to concentrate on is telling the most gripping story possible. I want you to pick up Promise Me and, you know, take it on vacation but not want to leave your hotel room because you want to know how it's all going to end from Myron and Wayne and Amy and Allie and all the rest of the people in the book. But I did age him 6 years. I mean, that was part of what I did when I brought him back, is to age him. It's been 6 years since I wrote him. I aged him 6 years, and there's several reasons for that. One is I wanted to keep him closer to where I was. I wasn't really that interested in writing a guy who was 33 or 34 anymore. I wanted to write a guy who was around 40.
Mm-hmm.
The second, so he will age. He's changed. He's mellowed. I also do want the characters to age and change. The days of Hercule Poirot or Sherlock Holmes, where they don't really have any effect, one book doesn't have any effect on their personal life in this next book, just doesn't do it for me anymore, and it doesn't do it for society anymore. So that's one of the reasons why I left them in the first place. I had to keep them changing, and so we go from there.
Great. And technique-wise, Harlan, third person, is that is that just the best way to write about Myron Bolitar for you versus a first person?
Well, for me, you know, one of the things I wanted with Promise Me, and this is a have your cake and eat it too kind of thing, is I wanted this to be, if you had never read a Myron Bolitar book, I think Promise Me is the best place to start. I realize it's 6 years after the last one, but then you can go back if you want and read it in order, but I wanted this to be a book, and what I have found is that most people who promised me the best reaction has been from people who had never heard of Myron Bolitar, didn't even realize he was a series. So that was part of my thinking. So by skipping 6 years in his life, it doesn't necessarily, he's just starting at a different stage, as though I'm writing a book about a 40-year-old man. Every character I've ever written has a backstory, and he just has a normal backstory. So that was part of it, and I also want to promise me to take what I'd learned from writing these standalone thrillers like Tell No One and The Innocent and Just One Look and applying that to a Myron Bolitar novel so it would be had that kind of great pacing, that great plotting, but along with a character that you could really sink your teeth into and get to know better.
Yeah, and you really pulled off and promised me because I read a lot of books and I read a lot of mystery slash crime fiction, and Promise Me had me guessing all the way to the end. And that's an art to do that, and I think you pulled it off brilliantly and Promise Me.
Thank you very much.
Harlan, I appreciate your time. One of the things that I'd like to kind of discuss before we end our talk is one of the things you do is the main difference between 2000 and 2006 are the changes in technology. And technology not only in how we solve crimes, but how kids use it. And there's a line you have where Myron says technology, keeping people together by allowing them to be apart. And did the technological aspect of the novel, is that, are you a pretty technically oriented person, or did you just kind of rely on how you function in your day-to-day life when you were writing those scenes?
I think more the latter. I'm technologically normal for a guy, which means I'm somewhat technologically savvy. The thing is that it's just part of our world. The days when, you know, you would read a book and the guy would try to call and the phone would be ringing and no one would answer it for hours on end, that doesn't really exist anymore. Everybody has a cell phone or some way of being reached. We're all in touch with each other. People have camera phones. I just went to this Coldplay concert, and it was, like, so annoying. Every 4 seconds, someone's holding up their phone to take a picture. That's just part of our society. To not have that, I think, would be unrealistic. So, yes, the kids IM each other, instant message each other. That's the way it goes. I mean, and some of them have Blackberries with them, and they can communicate with each other via text. That's just the way things are. To ignore that would be silly.
Mm-hmm. Well, great, and I agree, and so for listeners, I've been talking today with Harlan Coben. We've been discussing Promise Me, published by Dutton. And Harlan, I know your schedule is busy right now. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, and I hope to have you on again when your next novel is released.
Thanks very much, Casey. I enjoyed it.
Great.